Well, first of all, thanks. I would like to thank the organizer for the invitation. Well, I hope I try to do a different talk because I talk about the same topic in over both of the last year, and there were some of you were there, and I tried to do it something a little bit different, but not so different. So I hope you don't mind. So this is I'm going to talk about a work which is a joint work with Patricia Gonzalez. From Portugal, and well, you may have heard about KPZ, and Neil talked a little bit about it yesterday. And the idea is that this KPZ universality class is something very general that should appear in a lot of different contexts, like the polymers and surface growth, and we found out that it also appears in interacting particle systems and in a very general fashion, and that's what I'm going to explain you. Okay, so to start with, I will draw some picture. So this picture will represent interface growth. Okay, so what I'm drawing here, it's a sort of growing surface, or maybe not growing. So this surface is a discrete surface for the moment, and it has an interface, which is this green light that I'm writing here. People are interested in how this green line looks after a while. So questions like large numbers, central limit theorem is possible, fluctuations, what are the typical fluctuations of this green line when you look at from very far away? And how this green line is produced? Well, we can imagine that there are some blocks coming here, and these blocks want to enter here. So there are lots of blocks going around, and these blocks will take their chance and will enter on each one of these corners with some rate p. And there's also a reverse situation where the blocks, maybe they want to go away, where they want to go back to the free state, and this will happen with some rate that I'm going to call q. Okay, so this is a very simple model of surface growth, and it has some, in the formulation I just presented, it has some relation with the last pass of percolation and also with some polymer, some model for polymers. And what I'm interested in is the relation with the particle system. So I'm going to go to the particle system picture. And how can we do that? We can do that in various ways. The most natural way, probably, is the following. So I'm going to look at the gradient of this surface. What is the gradient? Well, it's the following. Here, you go two steps down. So I'm going to put here two particles. Then, on the next column, you go one step down. And I'm going to put one particle. Well, you do that for each side here. For example, you don't go down, so you just put an empty side here, and you keep going, and you will get a picture like that. So this is just a representation, and let's look at what happens when a block is added and when a block is removed. So when a block is added here, you can check that this 1 goes to 0, and this 0 here goes to 1. So that means in my picture here that this particle jumps to the right with some rate that I'm going to call p. And when this particle here goes up, so I'm thinking about that each the action only happens on corners. So at this corner you can add a block, and at this corner you can remove a block. So the remotion of this block here will correspond to a jump of this particle here at grade Q. Okay. So this is a model for surface growth. Sometimes this picture here is called corner growth, because we start from a corner. And what I just defined here, I forgot that. You cannot see the this side. Maybe I will just switch to the other side. Okay, so this is corner growth, and this system here is known as the zero range process. Okay, so, well, some of you are maybe more familiar with the bijection between the corner growth model and the asymmetric simple exclusion process. But, I'm doing here the bijection with the zero range process with for a reason. The reason is that what I'm going to talk about is very robust. It doesn't depend on the details of the model, so it's not, it doesn't really matter that we are looking at zero range process or simple exclusion process or even more complicated process. So that's the bijection. Actually, this is not exactly a bijection. In order to have a bijection between configurations there and what happens here, you need to keep track of the current. Okay, so if you keep track of the current, for example, here at the origin on the zero range process, you can go back and draw the interface green there. Because, of course, since we are taking the gradient, there is a constant missing if you just start from the gradient. And that constant is exactly the current through the origin on the zero range process. So that's after saying that, what I want to explain is that there are various regimes of interest here. Basically, things are different depending on the relation between P and Q. Okay? So, if, roughly speaking, P minus Q, so let me think about this model there as a discretization, and let's take the discretization to zero. So let me take a mesh 1 over n. That's it. Each one of those squares I drew there are of size 1 over n. Then we rescale time accordingly. The scale time will be different depending on the regimes I'm going to show. So that's the parameter of my. So that gives me a family of models, and we want to see what happens when the n goes to infinity. The usual thing. We're trying to prove some central limit theorem, maybe some invariance principle, some weak convergence theorem, and so if p minus q is goes to zero faster than 1 over square root of n, we have Gaussian fluctuations of the green curve. Huh? Doesn't matter. It will be just a sign on the equation later. So if, now probably the sign matters because, let me see. So P minus Q. So this is much bigger than 1 square root of n. We are in the KPZ universality class. And here lots of different things appear. Well, we can see some Tracy Whedon distributions. If you take limits of good observables, every processes, if we rescale things properly, etc. All these features may appear when the, when this with this rate here goes to zero faster than this escape. And there is a threshold here that somebody, sometimes physics is called a crossover scaling. And what happens here is that you get KPZ equation. And KPZ equation, this is something that in a sense interpolates between the Gaussian regime on which basically the system is roughly speaking symmetric and the asymmetric regime where asymmetry is it's important, it's relevant, and we will get some non-Gaussian behavior. And well, KPC equation was introduced by Cardar, Paris, Schenk in 1986, and the equation is the following. So it's dTh equals to d Laplacian h plus a d prime gradient of h square plus. So this thing here is black noise, white noise, space-time white noise. This thing here is the diffusion coefficient. This A here is this A I wrote here. D prime is the derivative of the diffusion coefficient. This thing here is the susceptibility. Well, of course, in order to define these quantities, the observation, we need to do the following. The process, this process, the zero range process, is a conservative particle system. Okay, so particles are neither destroyed or created in this system, except at the boundary, for this case. But in the bulk, particles are conserved. Therefore, it's very natural to have a family of invariant measures for the, for this process, at least on when it's defined on Z or on the torus or on a... And in the case of the zero-range process, in the case of, in most of these processes, there is exactly one ergodic measure associated to each density, possible density of particles. So here, for the zero-range process, the density goes between 0 and infinity. For the exclusion process, density is going between 0 and 1. And these quantities here depend on the density. So this is why here we can put a derivative, no? So this is the derivative with respect to the density of the diffusion coefficient associated to that particular density. And so this is KPZ equation. And a natural question is, does it, the green line, or the fluctuations of the green line there, converge to the solution of this equation? That's very a natural question, and but it's, there are some problems there. The first problem is that this KPZ equation is extremely degenerated. It turns out that in this in for particle system, usually invariant measures are of product form, or they have exponential decay of correlations in space. Therefore, if you scale the density of particles with space, like 1 over n, what you will get as fluctuations in the limit is white noise. That is saying that the green line looks like Brownian motion when look at the right scale. Brownian motion is not differentiable. So what is the square of the gradient of Brownian motion? This is why this equation is not very well posed. That causes some trouble. And the trouble that it causes is that we don't know how to solve it. So, well, an important quotation here is Bertini-Jacomin. And they prove that for A set, let me call the green line I drew there HN of TX. When properly rescaled, this thing here converges in distribution to the so-called Kohlhoff solution of KPZ. In particular, they made sense of what the Kohlhoff solution is. That was already described by physicists, but without any rigorous definition of what the Kohlhoff solution, how the Kohlhoff solution solves actually the KPZ equation. And they also proved that in the case on which we start with the asymmetric simple exclusion process and the difference is like square root of n, we have convergence to that. Yeah? Yeah, but the proof also applies. It's pretty general. Huh? Well, it depends on what do you call it doesn't apply. I mean. Okay, it could be difficult or not difficult, but it's more or less the ideas are more or less the same. That's an important work, and then I have to quote a lot of now. I should quote a lot of people. So after that, that was in the 90s. Recently, we start to look at the connection between this approach of Bertini-Jacomin to the KPZ coming from the particle system, and the fact that the same KPZ equation should appear at some limits of polymers or at some objects in last pass percolation or even in surface growth like there. I now have to quote a lot of people. I hope I didn't forget anyone, so I would quote like here so Gideon Amir, Martin Balash, Alexei Borodin, Eric Kato, Ivan Corbin. I hope I don't forget anyone. Patrick Ferrari. Jeremy, of course. Then Tomohiro Sasamoto. Timo. And also Herbert. So all of these guys have been working a lot on recently on this problem, and what they have proved, they try to understand better how this solution behaves. And in particular, a problem which is probably interesting, interested most the people is what are the fluctuations of HT0. Okay, if you look at one particular site, one particular line there, what happens with the fluctuations. And the fluctuations are non-Gaussian and in, out of order. There are this funny exponent, two-thirds, that we already saw in Balin's talk. What we are trying to do is we are trying to work in the other direction. All these works are based on the on various features which are kind of particular for each model, but that allows you to give us a lot of information about the limit and a lot of information about how do you converge to the limit. But for example, if you try to apply these methods for slight modifications of our processes, like lattice gases in the context of particle systems, or Ginzburg-Landau process, it doesn't seem to apply directly. So what we try to do is to prove a weaker result in a broader sense. So so now you take your favorite particle system. So we assume so our assumptions are you take P minus Q equals to A over square root of N. We take diffusive scaling. Which means that you take a mesh 1 over n and times of order tn squared. Then we assume that we start from equilibrium. We start from an equilibrium measure. It has to be ergodic. We assume, let me call it this measure here, new rho. We assume that this new rho satisfies equivalence of ensembles. And we assume, and we want to assume also that we have a spectral gap for the dynamics of my particle system of order Cn square on boxes of size n. So take your favorite particle system, start it from an equilibrium measure. Assume that the equilibrium measure satisfies, yeah? Okay, so imagine you have a symmetric particle system. Okay? So and that for that one, you know the environment measure, you know everything I wrote here. And now put an asymmetric part on it, such that the new thing is still a particle system, is still the same invariant measures, and scale it in such a way that, so multiply, if you want to think about generators, multiply the generator by 1 over square root of n. That will be a possibility. There are other possibilities, but that will be the most common possibility. And if your system satisfies these things, we can prove a theorem. So the theorem we can prove is the following. So the process, the sequence of process Hn, so I said that if you start from the particle system, you can recover the green line looking at the current at that point and the configuration of particles. So let's assume that we did that and we obtained this process HN here. This thing is tight, so it's as a process in the space of continuous with respect to the L infinity topology, so it's uniform in the uniform topology. And that's the first thing. And the second thing is that any limit point it's a stationary energy solution of KPZ equation. Okay, so we propose a definition of solution for this KPZ equation, is something which we call energy solution. Right now I don't want to enter into the details of what energy solution is, and maybe I will try to do it at the end if I had some time. What I want to stress now is another thing. This is in a sense, it's not a satisfactory theorem because we don't have convergence because we don't know if energy solutions are unique or not. So there is modulo a uniqueness result. This will tell you that the green curve that I drew there goes to the KPZ solution of to the stationary solution of KPZ equation if you start from equilibrium. The other drawback of the theorem is that exactly that one. You have to start from equilibrium. In the other hand, it's pretty general. So we just need a few ingredients, and we can prove our theorem. So and the proof is very robust. So it basically, aside the usual technical modifications that you have to introduce model by model, the proof is robust. It works for any particle system on which the symmetry goes like 1 square root of n. So it's a family of systems, of course, for which you have some information about the invariant measures, or for which you have some information about the relaxation to equilibrium in finite boxes. What I want to show you now is it's an application of this theorem, which I like. I think it's pretty nice. Usually, you prove functional limit theorems with some aim, and the aim is to prove a convergence of some observables. So, for example, people are interested in the HT0. Usually, of course, if you have an information for the whole process, it's better. But one object that people are very interested in is this quantity here for a fixed point. See what is how this quantity fluctuates in time. And sometimes what is more convenient is to prove a theorem for the whole process, because maybe it's easier, you have more information about the limit, and then if you have a functional convergence theorem, you can recover convergence for your particular observable from that theorem. So let me explain you what I call an additive functional. So additive functional. So let me call eta t of x, and let me put here an n because here we have a family of processes. This is the number of particles at site x. Okay, so let me assume when I When I said when you scale properly, I'm of course hiding there a lot of things. Like for example, there is a characteristic velocity in this problem when you should look at. So I'm going to assume that this characteristic velocity for simplicity is equal to zero. So that will be in the case of the asymmetric process or the deranged process, just to take the density equals to 1/2, for example. It doesn't really matter. And what you do? Well, so we have a theorem for this thing, so it's so the theorem has three parts. So the first part is the following. It's about the stationary solution of KPZ equation. So let me call HT, HTX, the solution of KPZ equation in equilibrium. And what we can prove is that the following limit exists. Okay, so this limit exists. Second, if its uniqueness holds, I mean, if the energy, stationary energy solution of KPZ is unique, or if for other reasons we know that the limit is unique, or if you want, taking subsequences such that the limit exists, we have the following. So here I have to take the mean. So the fluctuations of the number of this is what people call in the case of the exclusion process, the occupation time. In the case of the exclusion process, this quantity here has value 0 or 1. So it denotes the amount of time a site was occupied by a particle at till time t. So we take out the mean. So this is a fluctuation. And this is equal to the process gamma of t. And third, okay, so now I'm going to take a local, well-behaved function f. Okay, so a local function is a function that only depends on the configuration of particles around the fixed box of the region. Well-behaved, you will see in a moment, since I'm dealing with the general processing, f can be bad-behaved, could be something like the exponential of the number of particles to the square, something that is very wild, and anything that you want to compute will diverge with respect to it. So what I claim is that the following quantity has a limit. This is a very classical problem in Markov chains. It's the problem of fluctuations of additive functionals. So you take a big of sum, or more generally, an additive functional of your favorite family of Markov processes, and you want to look at the fluctuations of that quantity, and you want to prove some functional central limit theorem. And the case is that, if uniqueness holds, this thing here converges to I'm denoting here new rho of f, the expectation of f with respect to the measured new rho that I that is the equilibrium measure for from which I'm starting my process. And we have an exact expression for the limit of this object. So in a sense, the occupation time captures all the information that what's going on around the origin on this process. Okay, so well, this the first result. Well, these three results are conditioned to uniqueness, or if you don't know uniqueness, and if you take a subsequence that is converging, we can prove that for that subsequence, there is a delimiting process that I can call h of tx. For that process, that limit exists, and we have this convergence theorem here. Okay, so what I want to stress is that I call this result universality because it's a truly universal result in the sense that it doesn't really depend on the details of the model. There is a limiting object, or at well, we, I don't know if the object is unique. Let's say for the moment there is a limiting family of objects, which describes the fluctuations of the density of particles. The derivative of h represents the density of particles in the limit, or the function h for the surface growth model, and that limit object is meaningful in the sense that we can prove that various functionals of our Markov chains converge to what they should converge, not to the corresponding functional of the limiting process. And I should stress that point. Notice that the existence of the process gamma of t is not trivial, because h it's local in equilibrium for each fixed time. H is a Brownian motion. Even if the process is not in equilibrium, it's fairly believed that locally h looks like a Brownian motion. So the derivative doesn't exist. But the integral in time of the derivative is a well-defined continuous process with a good property, and it's actually a meaningful process in the sense that it's the process that appears in the limit of functionals of our general processes. Okay, so. And it's continuous. And it's continuous. We have some bounds on the moments as well. And that's it. I think I don't have time to talk about energy solution this time. I think it's better if I just stop here. Thank you very much. It's any limit point, and what is certainly true is that for any energy solution, the limit exists. Well, we believe that it's not the case, because we believe that the energy solutions are unique. But in principle, it could be different, because we don't know if the energy solutions are unique.
Yeah?
No, it's a notion that could be of interest because it doesn't. Okay, so well, you ask it, so I have to explain it. Okay, so well, the notion of weak solution of that is kind of let's say it's reasonable. No? You multiply by the function, you take all the integrals you have to take, and that will give you some definition of weak solution, provided that you define what the square is. So the energy condition tells you that that thing exists. So the energy condition is the following. So you define a process that we call A T epsilon, and we apply it to a test function f. You already use f there, maybe I use g here. So you do the reasonable thing to do. So you smear out a little bit, so you take h of xs, so I call it s x plus epsilon minus h of xx, you divide by epsilon, you square it, you take g, and you take the so g bar, which is g minus its mean, so it's a mean zero function that I want to take here. So dx, df. So this is h. So this is what you should guess is the first naive approximation of what the nonlinearity should be. Well, it's very naive if I just say that, okay, if this limit exists, then I have a formulation of the equation. Because this doesn't really give you any information. So the energy condition is the following. So if there exists a constant k that does not depend on anything, such that expectation of at epsilon g minus at epsilon prime of g squared is smaller than, so you have the constant k, you have the maximum between epsilon and epsilon prime, you have t, and you have the L2 norm of g. So that's what I call the energy condition. So if there exists a constant k such that this inequality is true for any test function g, for any time t, and for any epsilon epsilon prime, maybe smaller than 1, just to be safe, then I call this a weak solution there, such that this guy here exists, is what I call an energy solution. Of course, this inequality here implies that the limit exists, because this is Cauchy in L2. But it implies more things. For example, it implies the existence of this kind of things there, and various continuity properties of those solutions. Okay? Yeah? Well, it depends on not difficult to see. You know, it's we use a renormalization argument to prove that bound there. Okay, so well, if you know about particle systems, you probably know that renormalization arguments are not so common in. Yeah. Everything breaks down. That's one of the well. Probably this is one of the important open problems in the fields of particle systems. How to treat fluctuations out of equilibrium? There are very few results on pointing to that problem. And well, if anyone knows how to do it, it will be a big advance in the field. So we are limited for our technology, let's say.